In one of his very first books, written 15 years ago now, Bishop Robert Barron recalls a conversation he had with a monk at a Benedictine monastery while once on retreat. This monk, Father Godfrey Diekmann was his name, was actually a very important person in the liturgical life of the American church in the last century. He was a paratus at Vatican II. A paratus was a theologian called upon to give advice to the bishops throughout the council sessions. So Barron recalls asking the old monk one day on his retreat, if he could do it all over again, would there be one theological focus that would define his life as a priest and a monk? And Father Godfrey responded without hesitation, deification. Father Godfrey had been a professor of the Greek fathers, theologians of the first five centuries of the church in the eastern part of Christendom, Gregory of Nyssa, Basil the Great, John Chrysostom, and their theology centered on this idea of deification, that it's possible to get so holy that one actually participates in the divinity of God. That the goal of a Christian person is not just to worship God, but to become one with God such that God actually takes up residence in you and begins to act through you. What Barron was so intrigued by in this response of Father Godfrey, what you and I ought to be considering this weekend as we celebrate our patron, St. Louis, is that the Christian life shouldn't just make us better people or kinder people. The Christian life, all of this church stuff, mass, prayer, ministries, works of charity, is really about one thing: allowing God to take up residence in us so that at some point, our thoughts will actually become God's thoughts. Our will actually become God's will, so that our life will be God's life happening in us. When we become aware of this, which is, whether we realize it or not, already happening in us, by our very creation in his image and likeness. When we become aware of this, we become saints. Saints are people that God inhabits to make himself present in the world. This weekend, we look to this shrine and we celebrate a very important saint, our patron, St. Louis of France. Yesterday was his feast day, his saint's day, the day we consider this man, Louis, as more than just a king, more than just a good man, more than a faithful husband with 12 kids, more than a faithful Catholic. This weekend, we celebrate the fact that the most remarkable thing about Louis is that he allowed God to take up residence in him, which made this good king a participant in the divinity of God. He was 12 when his father, Louis the Lion, died, and despite the greedy nobles and tedious politicians angling for the crown, his mother, Blanche of Castile, promptly scheduled and celebrated his coronation at the cathedral in Reims, where the kings of France had been crowned all the way back to Clovis in 498. The young king grew to love many things in life, especially the people of his kingdom. Nothing, he said, is better than a free and friendly conversation between two free people. He loved the liturgy. It's said that as a young boy, Louis and his mother Blanche would go around the local monasteries of Paris and chant with the monks at morning and evening prayer. As he grew in his kingship and gained confidence and power, he built many monasteries for the express purpose of being able to pray with the monks. He also loved the Holy Land. He actually lived in Palestine for 4 years, giving aid to both the Crusaders and pilgrims. He went on pilgrimage himself many times in his life, once receiving as a gift a piece of the crown of thorns from the Latin emperor of Constantinople, Baldwin II, for which he built Sainte-Chapelle in Paris. Today, the relic of the true crown of thorns still exists in Notre Dame Cathedral and is venerated every Good Friday by the people of the city. Louis, our patron, was a student his whole life. One of his friends, a priest by the name of Robert of Sorbonne, was once visiting Louis and told him about his dream to build a university for the poor so that they might have the opportunity to learn just like the wealthy. Louis loved the idea so much that he went to Pope Clement IV and gained permission to create a Catholic university, which to this day is known in Paris as the Sorbonne. It's the same university that a few reasonably important priests taught theology, St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Albert the Great, and St. Bonaventure. All because of our patron, St. Louis. He was a great judge of civil matters. They say he used to sit under a tree in a city park incognito and welcome anyone to come and engage his skills to settle arguments. He did the same with the kings of Europe. He was known to bring together rival kings and serve as arbitrator in their disputes. Once he defeated King Henry III in battle, King Henry of England, and he was so fair in his treatment of King Henry III that years later, Henry came to Louis about different matters, asking Louis to judge Henry's nobles in those matters. He built hospitals, particularly for the poor, because at that time, the wealthy, they didn't need hospitals. They were cared for in their homes by private doctors and nurses. Once he built a hospital for blind men, equipped it with a chapel, and ensured with the local bishop that there would always be a priest assigned there to celebrate daily mass so that the blind men wouldn't have to struggle in the streets looking for a church. He also built a house for women who had been driven by poverty into prostitution, and he called it the House of the Daughters of God, so that they'd be able to turn their lives around with dignity and respect. Most of all, though, Louis loved the poor. They say that over 100 people would eat in his palace every day, people living on the streets. And it is said that often the king would serve them at table himself, and then he would eat their leftovers as his meal. He died when he was 56 in North Africa in a city called Tunis, on the way back on another pilgrimage to his beloved Jerusalem. He, Louis, was what we want to be, a saint. And as Father Godfrey would certainly agree, by the way he lived his life, Louis had become a partaker in the divinity of God. Deification. Louis and God had become one. I'm sure that the poor who benefited from Louis's generous hand thought it was the very hand of God coming to their aid. And I suspect that the sick thought that Louis was bringing God to them when they needed God the most. Even the kings of Europe recognized that Louis, he had this way, he could see what God sees. He could judge as God judges. He could set right what had become wrong. He could bring order out of chaos. The only way he could have done this is if he and God had become one. Deification. People thought this of Lewis, not because of Lewis. As I know he would say right now, if he could step down from that pedestal and speak to us in person. They thought these things of Lewis because God was in Lewis. And this is what made him a saint. A saint is someone who has become one with God, so much so that God is made manifest to the world in the saint. We don't worship saints. Catholics do not worship saints. We worship God. But we know that God takes up residence in saints, so we venerate them like they're little houses of God themselves. This has to be your goal. This has to be my goal. People have to walk by us and say, oh, there's a little house of God right there, because God has taken up residence in that person. We should want to be so close to God that maybe one day he might choose our very bodies in which to live himself out in the world. This is deification. In Greek, it would be theosis. In Latin, it's deificatio, deification. When God and you become one in the world. St. Lewis and all the saints, he was able to be aware of the indwelling of God in him. Father Thomas Merton, I think, understood this quite well when he wrote this, and I'll leave this with you this morning. Think about St. Lewis. Think about saints. Think about you and your life and what God is wanting to do through you. Father Merton wrote this: the presence of God in his world as its creator depends on no one but himself. But the presence of God in the world as a person depends upon people. Not that we can add anything to the mystery of the incarnation, but we are able to choose whether we shall become aware of his presence in us, so that we live no longer for ourselves, but rather we begin to live only in him. When this happens to you, when this happens to me, when we begin to find that our very existence is reliant on his indwelling in us, when this happens, sainthood happens. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.